I understand that a couple of weeks ago, President Reagan was late to a meeting and he jumped in his limousine and told the chauffeur to step on it, and the chauffeur declined, saying that would be against the law to exceed the speed limit, and so Reagan crowded him out from behind the wheel and put him in the back seat and drove off himself. And after a couple of blocks, a patrol car pulled the limousine over, and the senior patrolman sent the junior officer forward to write the ticket, and he came back in a moment white as a sheet, and he said, "Sir, I can't give that car a ticket. The guy in there is too important." And he said, "Well, who is it?" He said, "I don't know, but President Reagan's his driver." And I felt that way looking at Joseph this week. Joseph has been languishing as a slave and in prison and all these terrible things we've been seeing for the past several weeks together. And now suddenly, he is out of the dungeon and standing before Pharaoh, and having interpreted Pharaoh's dream, is elevated to the place of prime minister. And we're going to look this morning at some of the teachings that emerge from that incredible event in the life of Joseph. We've been watching as God has painted a portrait of Joseph over the past several weeks for us. He's a man who has grown through adversity because God was with him and he had a teachable heart. We've said that if there was one thing that we would use to remember the life of Joseph, it would be God was with him. He was a man who was being made deep as the Lord allowed him to go through unfairness and injustice to refine the gold that was in his character and to allow the soil, the silt, to be dropped from the kern of his life. He was a man whose life shows that God works his plan in history through the perfect blending of the human and the divine. God was with Joseph, but Joseph had his part to play in God's great plan as well. Now, we have seen God's power somehow supernaturally accumulates in the life of those who faithfully wait out the dungeon times. The dungeon times of life are those times when we feel confined, when we are improperly judged, when we are unfairly treated, when we feel lonely and forgotten, when we feel the real pangs of persecution in our personal lives, those times of hurt and of pain, when we feel there'll never be another day. But God accumulates his power in our lives if we're faithful during those times. And then the time comes in God's good time when he's prepared to release that supernatural power. And we've seen the mechanism of that relief is that release is truth acted upon. That's the way it was in the life of Joseph. Joseph was allowed to see in Pharaoh's dream what was coming for Egypt. Then it was incumbent upon him to act upon the truth that God allowed Joseph to see, thereby releasing the power of God to work through the life of Joseph. Well, Pharaoh's dream, as we know, had to do with the coming of a great famine. Now, famine is nothing new to that part of the world, and I've got a couple of famine quotes here for you this morning. One commentator has said this: "Years of drought, bad harvests, and famine are well attested in the lands of the Nile. In very early times, for example, at the beginning of the third millennium, 3,000 years before Christ, there is said to have been a seven-year famine according to a rock inscription of the Ptolemies. King Zoser sent the following message to the governor of the great cataracts of the Nile at Elephantine. Quote, I am very concerned about the people in the palace. My heart is heavy over the calamitous failure of the Nile floods for the past 7 years. Now, this is a message 3,000 years old. There is little fruit, vegetables in short supply. There is a shortage of food generally. Everybody is robbing his neighbor. Children weep, young folk slouch around. The aged are depressed, have no power in their legs. They sit on the ground. The court is at its wit's end. The storehouses have been opened, but everything in them has been consumed. And then the commentator goes on, traces have been found in the granaries which existed even in the Old Kingdom. Little outlines of these granaries which existed. In many tombs there were little clay models of them. Apparently they were making provision, the Egyptians were, for possible years of famine even among the dead. So the idea of famine is not a new one in that part of the world. If the Nile floods properly, then there's great prosperity. If there are times when the Nile does not flood, then there's great calamity. Now, this is what Pharaoh had been told by Joseph was coming. Any record, you may wonder, of this famine time from the period of Joseph? And the answer to that question is yes. There are archaeological records of that famine. Here's what one commentator says about that. The 7 years famine. Bruch, in his Egypt Under the Pharaohs, tells of an inscription which he calls very remarkable and luminous. In a family rock-cut tomb of a certain Baba, governor of the city of El Kab, south of Thebes, erected in the 17th dynasty, which was contemporaneous with Joseph, this inscription is found, quote, I collected corn as a friend of the harvest god, and when a famine arose lasting many years, I distributed corn to the city each year of the famine. This could very well have been one of Joseph's subordinates who is making a record of his own contribution to the salvation of Egypt after having collected corn prior to the famine. Well, so a coming famine is going to be used by God to elevate Joseph, to bring him before Pharaoh, and then to bring him great honor. Let's look at Genesis 41 as we pick up the story in verses 37 through 43. Now, you'll remember very briefly, Pharaoh has had the dream of the seven fat cows, the seven lean cows, the seven fat ears, the seven lean ears. Joseph has interpreted the dream for him, told him it means there will be 7 good years of production and then 7 terrible years of famine. And he gives Pharaoh the advice to select a man who will go around the land with full authority of Pharaoh to collect all of the food in the granaries, keep 20% of it back on an annual basis so that there will be plenty during the times of great famine. Verses 37 through 43, we pick up the story as Pharaoh is reviewing Joseph's proposal with his other counselors. Verse 37. This proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all of his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a man as this, in whom is the Spirit of God? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discreet and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand, put it on Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in the garments of fine linen, and put on a gold chain around his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot, and they cried before him, bow the knee, bow the knee. Now, the commentators I've read on this passage say that this is exactly the way Pharaoh elevated his chosen one to the post of Grand Vizier. And I found an illustration of that which reflects precisely what was being said in this passage. Pharaoh is seated on his throne to the left, an attendant behind him, and the Grand Vizier who is being elevated has just had the long linen robe placed on him. We can't see a signet ring, but we can see the collar of gold which is being placed around the neck of the man who is being elevated to this lofty position. Now, in the case of Joseph, Pharaoh had done some extraordinary things. First, he had, of course, taken him out of the dungeon. He had, in effect, naturalized him, made him an Egyptian citizen, because you couldn't hold this office without being a citizen of Egypt. So he had removed him from his slave status and made him a naturalized Egyptian citizen. He had imbued him with all of the powers of Pharaoh himself, which in our country would be the equivalent of taking the reins of power in all 3 branches of our government, legislative, executive, and judicial branch. He was the virtual dictator in the space of a very brief morning, of the richest country that was known to the world of that day. Now, you see that there are three symbols which have been conferred upon Joseph in this symbolic transfer. The first symbol, of course, is the ring. The ring was always the symbol of authority. He was given Pharaoh's ring. One commentator has said, "The ring was of so much importance with the ancient Egyptian kings that their names were always enclosed in an oval inside an elongated signet." So the ring was the symbol of Pharaoh's power. And you see the passage is careful to say Pharaoh himself took his own ring from his hand. Didn't get somebody else's ring, didn't have somebody else do it, took it off his hand, gave it to Joseph himself, the symbol of Pharaoh's power. The second, of course, is the robe that was placed on Joseph. And that would cause us to be reminded of the passage over in Revelation, wouldn't it? Revelation 3:18 says, "Christ counseling us to buy from me gold refined by fire that you may be rich, and white garments to clothe you to keep the shame of your nakedness from being seen." The robe in Scripture is always the symbol of character. And this is of a particular kind of linen. This is a linen called byssus, B-Y-S-S-U-S, used at this time in Egypt only by the nobility and the priesthood. And this is the robe with which Pharaoh caused Joseph to be clothed. So the ring was the mark of Pharaoh's very own personal presence with Joseph, the robe of his character, and then, of course, the necklace, the chain of office clearly is the symbol of the power of the office which he has been invested with. Actually, a collar of gold, as we saw in the slide. Now, taken together, all of this means that Pharaoh, before all of his court, which is to say over all of the important nobles in the land, he is transferring to Joseph his identity. Pharaoh's identity is being conferred on Joseph. And he is saying, "Joseph, from now on, when people look at you, they won't be able to understand you unless they understand me. They won't know who you are unless they know who I am." Isn't that a beautiful picture? As Christians, of course, we remember Jesus saying, "No one has ever seen God, but if you have seen me, you have seen the Father." The Father revealed himself through the person and the work of Jesus. And we too, of course, are clothed, as Joseph was, in Jesus' authority, in Jesus' character, and therefore imbued with Jesus' power. Of course, that takes place in the great and inexplicable transfer of Jesus' whole personhood onto us by an act of grace through his outworking of love on the cross. We have an assumed identity like Joseph did, and our assumed identity is the gift of the King. Well, let's look at verse 43. There's something here that's particularly appealing to me. Verse 43, "Pharaoh made him," that is Joseph, "to ride in his second chariot, and they cried before him, 'Bow the knee, bow the knee.'" The chariot came into Egypt about the time of the Hyksos invasion of Egypt, and this is what one commentator says about that. "The luxury model of the new chariot is an ostentatious thing which was later used by the rulers of the new kingdom. Before this day, this had not been the practice on the Nile. The ceremonial chariot, harnessed to thoroughbred horses, was in those days the Rolls Royce of the governors. The first chariot belonged to the ruler, and the second chariot was occupied by his chief minister." Now, this is the place where we come to the point that we say, "Now you're talking." Now, what is the good of having all of these qualities if you can't display them before your friends? What is the good of having been elevated to power if nobody knows it? And our friend Joseph has now gone from the pain of the prison to the power of the palace. What a marvelous transformation. And one of the great things that happens to him is that as he rides along in this open chariot, people run ahead of him saying, Joseph is coming, Joseph is coming. Everybody bow down. Everybody acknowledge the power of Pharaoh being shown through the person of Joseph. Can you imagine what it would be like if, having been the subject of abuse in your own life, having been set aside, having been forgotten, having been perhaps even unfairly imprisoned, you were suddenly lifted up, put into the back end of a jet, and sailed directly to Washington, D.C., land at Andrews Air Force Base. A helicopter picks you up there, takes you directly to the back lawn of the White House, and there in the Oval Office, the President is waiting. And he says to you, you may find it hard to believe this, but we have made a computer check of everybody in the United States, and you are the one person with the qualifications that we need to meet a supreme and total emergency which has come over the country. You are the only one who can pull it off. The Congress has passed special laws. The Supreme Court has subjected itself to your authority, and I am hereby conferring upon you the full majesty and power of the presidential office so that you are, in one person, all three branches of the government. You can pass the laws that Congress used to pass. You can make the laws constitutional the way the Supreme Court used to do. And you've got the full power of the executive office to put everything into effect. You can use the CIA and the FBI and the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. And if that's not enough, the most powerful arm of the government all put together, the Internal Revenue Service, is also yours. Power plenipotentiary. You're my named second in command, and you're the one who's going to put this plan into effect. Now, there's one thing you're going to have to do for me. The people need to see who you are. So we've got a brand new limousine out here, and you're going to sit up on the back of it, and we're going to take you on a tour all around the whole country. And as you go along, people are going to ride in the front and in the back saying, here he comes. Everybody give three cheers. Now, wouldn't that be a terrible thing to have to go through? You'd say to yourself, this is better than being Batman. I have never seen anything that comes quite as close as this to being the acknowledgement of what I've deserved all of my life, and nobody has been able to see. Now, of course, in this class, being mature Christians, if we were to be moved from the pain of the prison to the power of the palace, we wouldn't react that way, would we? Because we understand the importance of humility. And so we could say something like, I want to be like Joseph, Lord, faithful, true, and good. I'd do the same as Joseph did. At least I think I would. If you throw me in a pit, I'm sure that I can take it. I'll stick out my neck for you, Lord, provided you don't break it. Sell me into slavery, Lord, put me into jail. Try me, Lord, and test me. And you'll see I'll never fail to praise you and to bless you, Lord, and tell the world your story. I'll bring you lots of business, Lord, and you can have the glory. What do I want in return? Nothing do I plead. Just to know I've served you, Lord, is all I really need. But if you insist, of course, well, there's a thing or two you could do for me, Lord. I've done so much for you. Unlike Joseph, Father, I don't need a signet ring. Just a little Visa card would be the very thing. Since the world belongs to you, I have got a dream. You got money, I got debt. We'd make a dandy team. So if you own the cattle, Father, on 1,000 hills, sell them to the butcher, Lord, so I can pay some bills. And then, like Joseph, make me, Lord, your second in command. And in an open limousine, I'd ride around the land. And then the world will stand amazed. And then the world will see that in your grace and wisdom, Lord, you've wisely chosen me. And if by chance I see someone whom I knew when a slave, I'll show that I'm still humble with a little papal wave. And if I see a former friend with whom I once was chummy, who dropped me when my luck turned bad, I'll say, hello there, dummy. And if I pass an enemy, someone who's done me dirt, who took great joy when I was weak in piling up my hurt, will I display a haughty look and seek revenge so sweet? Of course not. I'll just have my chauffeur drive across his feet. So make me just like Joseph, Lord, faithful, true, and good. I'd do the same as Joseph did. At least, I think I would. Now, friends, I have to confess to you that if I were to be elevated from pain to power, that I might have just a little problem with pride. But if I were like Joseph, I'd know what the antidote to that was. And this passage tells us that the antidote is a new name and a new heart. Let's look at Joseph's new name. Genesis 41, 44 through 45. He set him over all the land of Egypt. And moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh. And without your consent, no man shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah. And he gave him in marriage to Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, prince of On. And so Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Now, the meaning of Joseph's new name, Zaphnath-Paneah, is Living God Who Speaks. The Living God Who Speaks. Now, that doesn't mean that Joseph is the living God, but the living God speaks through Joseph. Reminds us of one of the principles that we refer to in this class a lot, and that is that as Christians, we need to understand that everything comes from God and nothing comes from us. It comes from God and through us. And if we're not careful, we get confused about what the source of the power is. Zaphnath-Paneah was Joseph's new name, the living God who speaks. You see what a great testimony this is. Joseph has so impressed a pagan king that this pagan king has given Joseph a name which reflects Joseph's own faith. Reminds us of the scripture that says, when a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. Joseph got a new name, and he also got a new wife. You see, his new wife is the daughter of the high priest, the most important religious figure in all the land. He therefore became a part of Pharaoh's family because the high priest was almost always related to the Pharaoh. So in one stroke, Joseph became the prime minister. He became the brother-in-law of the son-in-law of the high priest, member of the royal family, probably the most sought-after guest at every Cairo cocktail party from that moment on. What a remarkable, how could he handle this? This is what White has said about the person of Joseph. Joseph was now to be plunged into the most corrupt society that rotted in that age on the face of the earth. And had he not come into that pollution straight out of a dungeon of testing, Joseph would no more have been heard of. The sensuality of Egypt would have swallowed him up, but his father's God was with Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph to protect him, to guide him, and to give him victory. Zaphnath-Paneah was his new name, the living God who speaks. Paul wrote to Timothy and said, one time in my life, Timothy, I was in a place where no one came to my support, but everyone deserted me, just like Joseph. But what does Paul say to that? The Lord stood at my side. From pain to power, if we've got a new name, we could handle it. Look at Genesis 41, 46 through 49, and we'll see how this authority tested Joseph's faithfulness. 46 said Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. During the seven plenteous years, the earth brought forth abundantly, and he gathered up all the food of the 7 years when there was plenty. In the land of Egypt, he stored up all food in the cities. He stored it in every city, the food from the fields around it. And Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. Wow. Political power, financial power, territorial power, he had it all. It's almost become a cliche, the famous saying that all power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Joseph had absolute power. How is it that he was not corrupted? You may recall Plutarch having commented, "No beast is more savage than a man possessed with power." Joseph had it, and yet he was not a savage. He had a new name, but he also had a new heart. Let's look for evidence of that new heart in verses 50 through 52. Before the year of famine came, Joseph had two sons, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, prince of On, bore to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, "God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house." The name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. The names he gave to his two sons show what kind of changed heart, new heart, Joseph had to go with his new name. The first name, of course, both of these, interestingly, in Hebrew, he didn't call either of his sons by Egyptian names. The first name is Manasseh. It's from the Hebrew root word sana, S-A-N-A-H, which means to forget. Now, we don't really ever forget hurts, do we? But the sense of this word is very subtle. It means that God has taken the sting out of the memory. The memory is still there, but God has taken the sting out of it. And that's the reason Joseph wasn't resentful or bitter. What has Paul said? He besought God three times to take the thorn from his flesh, and God replied, "My grace is sufficient for you." Paul learned to transcend his circumstances, didn't he? This word Manasseh suggests that Joseph had allowed God to take the sting out of the memory. In our times of hurt and unfair treatment and loneliness and being set aside, can we allow God to bring a little Manasseh into our lives in the way that he did into the life of Joseph? Saving the experience, but removing the sting. Well, he called his second son Ephraim. It literally means double fruit or twice fruitful. And do you see where Joseph said he was fruitful? Not having been taken back to the land of Canaan and reunited with his parents, his brothers and his father, although that would come. But where is he fruitful? He's fruitful right in the land of my suffering. Marvelous. God allows us to be fruitful right where we're hurting, if we'll let him work through our lives. So Joseph named his sons in such a way that we can see what kind of new heart God had given him, along with a new name. Joseph's heart was safe in God's keeping, wasn't it? Safe in God's keeping, where the sting of bitterness is removed and the fruitful life grows out of the pain. The passage concludes verses 53 through 57 with something that should be familiar to those of us who have been members of this church for a while. The 7 years of plenty that prevailed in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said. There was famine in all the lands, but in the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph. What he says to you, do." And when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened up the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, All the earth came to Joseph to buy grain because the famine was severe over all the earth. Does that closing remind you of a sermon topic that Dr. Lancaster had a little while back when he said that as children of God, as those who have been called into God's family, we are blessed for a reason. You remember his slogan was blessed to be a blessing? We have been blessed in order that through us, God might bless others. Exactly what happened with Joseph. As Christians, we tend to console ourselves, don't we, by saying, God is really putting me through it now, but sooner or later, he's going to pay me off for all the suffering I've gone through here. The payoff may be that God blesses all right, but the blessing may be someone else being blessed through our lives. God uses the tough times in our lives to bless others, as he did in the case of the life of Joseph. Well, I wondered this week if we were to have the privilege, which we will one day in glory, of just sitting down and talking with Joseph and saying, Joseph, give me a couple of three things to take home. What have you learned from this roller coaster life that God has had you on, moving you from the pinnacle to the pit and back to the pinnacle and down to the pit again? How can you go from the pain to the power and not pass through the problem of pride, as many of us would have to confess that we did? I think Joseph might have said something like this. First, he said, in my long hours and days and weeks and months of hopelessness in the dungeon, I learned to pray a prayer that God always answers. How would you like to have a prayer that God always answers? I think it might be this one. Lord, give me the grace to hold on one more day. Just give me the grace to hold on one more day. A prayer God always answers. The old saying, life by the yard is hard, life by the inch is a cinch. That's a lie, you know. Life by the inch is hard too, but it's possible. One day at a time. Lord, just give me the grace in the dungeon of my circumstances to hold on one more day. Second, I think Joseph would tell us to learn to live outside our circumstances. Learn to live outside our circumstances. Joseph would have agreed with the Kipling in his famous poem, If, when Kipling refers to fame and failure, to success and disaster as being two imposters. Do you remember he says, treat those two imposters just the same? And do you remember what Paul said to the Philippians? He said, I have learned not to complain about want. Whatever state I'm in, to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. In any and all circumstances, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and want. I can do all things in him who strengthens me. Paul had learned to live outside of his circumstances, independently from them, so that whatever the circumstances were, he could praise God. I can do all things in him who strengthens me. Well, if we've got a prayer that God always answers, God, just give me the grace to get through one more day, and a principle that if we'll focus on the Lord and learn to live outside our circumstances, what third thing might Joseph have said? Well, I think he might have said something like this. If we seek contentment and not happiness, we will find serenity. I've heard serenity described as the ultimate flowering of the soul. Quick definition: serenity, peaceful, cheerful, free from storms, steady, utter calm, unruffled repose. How would you like to have people describe you that way when you were in the depths of despair? A serene person. If we will seek contentment and not happiness, we'll find serenity. Paul says, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and want, because I can do all things in him who strengthens me. The psalmist echoed that, didn't he, when he said, he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. You want to rest in God's shadow? Well, psalmist says, dwell in his shelter. Joseph might have concluded, I think, friends, by saying, I came to the end of myself there in that prison. And where I ended, God began. He gave me a new name and a new heart, made me forget all my trouble and fruitful in the land of my sufferings. Christian friend, I think that we can stake our lives on the truth of our conviction that if you are faithful, one day you too will be freed from the dungeon of your loneliness and your hurt and your pain. You'll be freed to stand before the King of Kings and be recognized by him before the entire heavenly host assembled. And there at his hand, you will receive a praise and glory and honor far beyond anything a mere Pharaoh could ever hope to bestow. And can you imagine what it's going to be like to hear those words from Jesus himself as he opens his arms to receive and embrace you, and he says, well done. Well done, good and faithful servant. Let's thank him. Father, you have given us new names and new hearts. Our new name is your name. We call ourselves Christians. Remind us to leave both our names and our hearts where Joseph left his, safe in your keeping, where the sting of bitterness is removed and the memory is made productive and fruitful as our lives grow right out of the pain. We're going to thank you for that in the midst of it, Father. In Jesus' precious name, amen.